It didn't look like we'd find their bodies. The fire was intense and left little. We picked through the debris carefully, respectfully. It was an unpleasant task. As we worked, Sarge showed up with several of the guys.
You find them?
Sarge asked. I was knelt down, picking my way through a large black pile. Not yet.
I doubt you will. That fire was hot.
I rose to my feet. We've got to get those bastards. This is twice now. They need to pay in a big way. Sarge nodded.
They will. We're going to stomp their dicks in the dirt.
Looking at Ted, I asked, How's the ear? Ted reached up and rubbed the bandage over his ear.
Fucking gone.
Mike gave him a little punch in the shoulder.
Come on, man. Chicks dig scars.
Ted glared back in reply.
Speaking of chicks, how's Jamie? Thad asked. She's doing okay, but Doc wants to get her to town, which is why we're here. You're supposed to meet the engineers at the power plant, Sarge said.
I know. I just wanted to find them.
We'll get some other folks over here to continue the search. We need to get on the road.
Go ahead, Morgan. We'll take care of this, Thad said. Wiping sweat from my face, I said, I also have to close up the broken sliding glass door, not to mention clean all the blood off my kitchen floor.
Thad smiled. I'll take care of that, too. I'll just get a door from one of the other houses around here. They're pretty standard, and we should find one that will fit.
I left Thad with Mike and Ted to keep looking. We went over to my house where Sarge's Hummer was waiting. Doc came out the door holding one end of a collapsible stretcher. Ian had the other end, and Jamie was lying on it, with her eyes closed, wrapped in a blanket. Eric was inside the truck and helped pull her inside. She winced a couple of times, as it wasn't the easiest thing to get her inside. Once she was in, Ian sat down beside her and wiped a couple loose strands of hair from her face. He smiled and said, You're going to be all right. You've got to come back so I can see what you look like in that dress. Without opening her eyes, she replied,
Shh, fat chance. Are you coming with me?
You want me to?
You need adult supervision. Someone needs to keep an eye on you.
Ian smiled again.
All right, I'll go so you can keep an eye on me.
I asked Eric where he was last night. I hadn't seen him since the shooting began. He nodded at Ian.
I was with him. When the shooting started, we moved to flank the truck.
Then the damn thing blew up, almost killed us. A couple of guys got out of it, and we shot their asses.
Okay. That was you guys shooting up there. We didn't know who it was, I said.
It was us, all right. I just wish we had been down here to help deal with all these assholes, Ian added. Looking around, he asked, Where's Perez?
Ian snorted. Aw, man, he's sick. Got the shits real bad. You thought he was a pain in the ass before. Holy hell, he's the biggest freaking baby I've ever seen.
Is he all right? I asked.
Ian nodded. Yeah. Doc checked on him. He'll get over it. Tell him to suck it up, Sarge said.
What was the explosion back there? I asked, pointing to the rear of the neighborhood with my chin.
That was a couple trying to get out, I think. They hit Dalton's surprise.
There's pieces of them hanging in the trees back there, Sarge replied.
Let's get this on the road. We need to get Jamie to the clinic, Doc said.
Whispering, I asked, How's she doing, Doc?
She's all right, but might need surgery. That's why I want to get her to the clinic. There's only so much I can do here.
We loaded up. Doc sat in the back with Jamie and Ian took the turret. I drove and Sarge rode shotgun. We didn't want to take too many people from the neighborhood. We didn't know what these guys may try next. As I pulled around two bodies lying in the road next to the still-smoking truck, Sarge said,
Good work, Ian.
This truck was like the others, an MRAP. I shook my head. Thinking back to the days in the before when people would look at you like you were crazy for being upset that the DHS was acquiring such equipment. But I have to admit, even I didn't foresee this. I pushed the speed on the old truck,
not wanting to waste time getting Jamie to the clinic. It was odd seeing the market in Altoona busy with people trading. They surely had heard the shooting last night. Maybe they didn't care. Not that I expected anything from them. After all, they had more pressing issues, like feeding themselves and their families. As we came into Umatilla, I noticed the old kangaroo there was busy as well. I briefly saw a sign that said milk. It intrigued me, and I made a mental note to stop by on the way back. As we passed the old Golden Gem plant, I hoped we'd be able to get the turbine running. And I really hoped these engineers knew something about it. The car barricade was opened as we approached, and I was able to pass straight through. Pulling up in front of the clinic, the staff was there waiting for us. Jamie was quickly unloaded and taken inside. I watched the doors close behind Doc as he followed her in. There was nothing I could do in there, and I'd only be in the way. After a brief moment, Doc came back out the door and handed me the bloody blankets. I looked at them and instantly recognized one of them. It was Little Bits. It was originally made for Taylor by one of my aunts and was passed down to each new baby girl. It was a mess now, but somehow we'd have to clean it up. Little Bit would surely want it back. It also made me think of my aunt up there in Jacksonville. She was alone, my uncle having passed away a couple years ago. He was a good man, retired coastie. I always enjoyed visiting them as a kid. They had three sons, and I'm sure those boys were taking care of her. I hope so, anyway. It really drove home the idea of not taking your loved ones for granted. You never know when the last time you see them will be the last time you see them. Let's go to the armory and find those engineers, Sarge said. We pulled up to the back gate and parked. As we were getting out, Cecil walked up. Morning, fellers. I hear you guys had a hard night. Sarge nodded. You could say that, but they got the worst end of it. Well, that's good. Something needs done with them, though, or this is just going to keep happening. Sarge spit in the dirt. And we're going to do just that. As they were talking, Shane, with the Eustace PD, came up. Hey, Morgan. What are we going to do with the kid we have locked up? It's getting to be a pain in the ass having to watch him and the guy from the other night. You're going to have to watch them for now. We've got bigger fish to fry at the moment. Anything else going on? I asked. He shook his head. No, it's actually been kind of quiet. As we were talking, a guy with a neatly trimmed beard ran up. Hey, Shane, I fed the prisoners. You need anything else? Not right now, thanks. Shane replied. I've got a couple of things I need to do. I'll be back later. As he walked off, I asked, Who's that? Oh, that's Micah Ravel. He wants to join the PD. He helps out with little things, takes some of the work off us, Shane replied. He from around here? I asked. No, I don't think so. He came in a few days ago. Seems eager enough and does whatever we ask. I looked at the guy as he walked off. Something about him just didn't sit well with me. Looking back at Shane, I said, Keep an eye on him. Micah? He's fine. You don't have to worry about him. I have to worry about everyone. Sarge returned and said the engineers would meet at the barricade out of town. They went to get their truck. Cecil was going to ride with us. We mounted up and pulled out onto the road. I drove down to the Lake Eustace Canal, and we got out to wait. I waved at the guys in the barricade when gunfire erupted right behind me. I dove to the ground as Ian opened up with the saw from the turret. Looking up, I shouted, What is it? Pausing for an instant, Ian shouted back, I don't know! And he went back to work with the machine gun. I got up and saw Sarge firing wildly into the water of the canal. Sarge was screaming his ass off as he pumped round after round into the water. I looked at Ian and waved. Cease fire! Cease fire! He stopped and looked over the smoking weapon at me. What is it? Hell if I know. I turned back toward Sarge just as he jumped off the road into the water. What the hell? I said, as I stepped up and peered over the edge. There was Sarge in the water, shouting to himself. I got your ass. I got your big ass. He looked up at me. Morgan, get your ass down here.
I sat on the edge of the road and dropped into the water. What is it? Sarge heaved, and an alligator's head bobbed out of the water.
I got his ass. I finally got me a lizard.
All that for a damn gator? I asked.
What is it? Ian shouted. I got me a big-ass lizard, Sarge shouted back.
You're out of your damn mind, I said.
All that for a gator? Ian asked from the road.
I looked up to see him standing over us.
I think the old man has lost his mind, I said. Quit your belly aching and help me drag this thing out of here, Sarge barked.
He was smiling from ear to ear.
You want to put that in the truck? Ian asked.
Hell yeah, we need the meat, and this is my lizard, and I'm taking it,
Sarge shot back. I helped Sarge drag the beast from the water, but we needed Ian's help to get the nearly 9-foot reptile up to the road.
Ah, damn, this thing is heavy, Ian grunted.
Sarge was almost vibrating with excitement. He looked at Ian wide-eyed.
I know, it's huge, ain't it?
Ian shook his head.
What the hell are you going to do with it?
Sarge looked at him like he was an idiot.
We're going to eat it, dipshit. What do you think we're going to do with it?
As we dropped the gator on the back of the truck, two Hummers came skidding to a stop beside us. Sheffield and Livingston hopped out with several guardsmen. Sheffield looked around.
What the hell's going on?
Putting his foot on the gator's head, Sarge replied,
I killed me one big-ass gator.
Sheffield looked down, then at Sarge.
All that shooting was for this?
He then looked up at Ian.
What the hell were you shooting at?
Ian shrugged. When he started shooting over there, I thought we were under attack, and I opened up on the tree line. Livingston chuckled.
So he killed a gator, and you killed some trees.
Ian smiled.
I guess, yeah.
Sheffield shook his head and looked at Sarge.
Here's your engineers. Don't you need to be getting to the plant?
Sarge waved him off.
We're going. Just as soon as we load this lizard up.
Sheffield huffed and looked at Baker.
I'll see you guys later. Try and get back before dark.
She nodded, and Sheffield got back in his truck. Livingston looked at me.
You really need to keep an eye on him.
I shrugged.
We need the meat.
Livingston walked away, shaking his head. After he was in the truck and they were driving back towards the armory, Ian looked at Sarge and said,
I get the feeling the captain doesn't like you much.
Cecil laughed.
You think?
Sarge snorted.
He can kiss my ass if he don't like me. He can't be first, but he can be next.
Get on the end of this lizard, Sarge said, motioning to the gator's tail. Cecil snickered.
I bet you was hell in the brass when you was still in.
As we hefted the gator, Sarge groaned.
You wouldn't believe half of it.
Once Sarge's trophy was loaded in the back of the Hummer, we mounted up and pulled out with the engineers following us. As we drove, I asked Sarge,
Did Doug tell you about the radio transmission we heard last night?
Surprised, Sarge looked over.
No, he didn't. What was it?
Smells like shit back here, Cecil shouted.
I laughed, but answered Sarge. It was some guys up in Idaho called the Radio Free Redoubt. They gave some news about the Marine Corps fighting in Atlanta. They also said the UN was considering sending in peacekeepers. Sarge snorted.
Peacekeepers? What are they going to send? Bunch of candy-ass Belgians? Or worse yet, the French? We'll kick the shit out of those boys.
Actually, they said the Russians and Chinese were all about it. Cecil leaned forward.
The Russians and Chinese, you say?
Then I looked at Sarge.
You actually going to eat this smelly-ass thing?
Hell yeah, I am,
Sarge shouted. Trying to keep the conversation on track, I replied.
That's what they said. I don't know how they'd have that kind of info.
They're probably being fed the info from the DOD, Cecil said.
They also gave out some kind of coded message, something about a maple tree,
followed by a bunch of numbers, I said. Again, Cecil leaned forward.
A maple tree? How many numbers?
Then he looked at Sarge.
I want to switch seats.
I shrugged.
I don't know. A bunch.
Pull your skirt down and quit your belly aching.
What sort of format were they in?
Sarge asked.
I don't know. There were a lot of them, I said.
You mean you fucking booger eaters didn't write it down?
Sarge boomed.
I glanced sideways at him.
Calm down. No, we didn't. We couldn't decode it anyway.
Well, we can't now, for damn sure, Sarge shot back.
We may have been able to. I know who you're talking about, and it sounds like they're using one-time pads, Cecil said.
Sarge spun around in his seat to face Cecil.
What do you know about one-time pads?
Cecil smiled.
You an Elmer, Linus?
What the hell's an Elmer? I asked.
It's a ham radio operator, Cecil said. I laughed and said,
be very, very quiet. I'm hunting wadios.
Sarge slapped me in the back of the head.
Shut up and let the grown-ups talk.
Hey, I shouted, but Sarge ignored me and spoke to Cecil.
You think you got the pads, Cecil?
They used to run drills using one-time pads. I attended Hamfest and picked up a stack of pads from a friend of mine there.
Morgan, what frequency did you pick it up on?
Somewhere around 6,800 megahertz, I think.
That's about right for a pirate radio station, Cecil replied.
Pirate radio? I asked.
Not really pirate now, but back in the day they would have been a pirate station. They probably practiced on 10 or 15 watts, but when the shit hit the fan, they ramped up their output. No one to stop them now, Cecil said.
We need to keep people on the radios from now on and write down any and all transmissions we hear, Sarge said.
At the plant, we all dismounted and the engineers introduced themselves.
I'm Scott Westfall, a man with a neat beard said, offering his hand.
I took it.
Morgan Carter. And this is First Sergeant Mitchell, and this is Cecil.
Everyone shook hands, and Scott continued the introductions.
This is Doc Baker. He motioned to a very attractive red-headed woman with blue eyes.
Going to have to keep Mike away from her, I thought.
Doc, I thought you were an engineer, Sarge said.
She smiled.
I have my doctorate.
Using a Gomer Pyle-style voice, Scott said,
it means she's really smart.
She smiled.
Watch it, Westfall.
Scott continued.
This is Terry Lane.
Terry nodded and shook everyone's hand.
And this is Eric Beach.
Beach was a young guy. He offered his hand, saying,
Beach, like the ocean.
Shaking his hand, I asked,
what other kind is there?
He offered a nervous smile.
Well, the tree, you know?
Sarge snorted.
You ain't from around here, are you?
Beach looked a little nervous. I put my hand on his shoulder.
Don't worry about him.
Just don't get your hands too close to his mouth.
I had to smile when he looked at his hands and pulled them in a little closer to his body.
Well, you brainiacs think you can get this heap up and running?
Sarge asked.
Let's take a look at things. One thing we're going to need for sure is a generator. We're going to need power to even test much of this, Terry said.
You guys know anything about gas turbines? Cecil asked.
I've got some experience with them, and Baker there worked in the utility industry, so she's familiar with it, Terry replied.
I'm no stranger to them, Scott said.
Sarge looked at Beach.
What about you?
I've studied them, he replied.
Sarge cocked his head.
What kind of engineer are you?
Beach stuttered.
I'm a...
Sarge cut him off.
Humma, 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 spit it out!
I'm an engineering student.
Holy Mary, Mother of God! Student? We need engineers!
Sarge barked. Laughing, I put my hand on Sarge's shoulder.
Leave him alone, Grumpy.
What's your plan to get power here? Baker asked.
I'm guessing you need three-phase 480, I said.
Scott nodded.
I know where a 35 kV generator is. We'll have to get it moved over here. It used to run the Eustis police station. That's on the small side, but it would probably get the job done, Terry said. Sarge looked at Cecil. Folks, Cecil here performed maintenance on this place when it was running, so he's a wealth of info for you. Cecil, why don't you show these guys around this thing and see if there is any kind of obvious defects? Cecil nodded. Come on, and I'll give the nickel tour. Cecil led them off into the plant, while Sarge and I hung out at the truck. I had enough on my plate. These guys are going to have to get this done. I was getting anxious and asked Sarge, what are we going to do about those bastards who attacked us? He was leaning over the hood of the truck and motioned with his hands. I don't think we'll have a problem with these brainiacs. You know what I'm talking about, Sarge nodded. I know, Morgan. We're going to have to talk to Sheffield. We're going to need their help to do this all the way. And it is going to be all the way. Nodding, I said, no quarter. Kill them all. I'm worried, though, Sarge said. There's no way to take these guys on without casualties. He paused and fiddled with an oak leaf stuck behind the wiper blade on the windshield. After a moment, he looked back at me. And I don't want to lose any of you. You're not the only one. But how many more times are these guys going to hit us before someone dies? Taylor is still recovering, and now Jamie is in the clinic. I think we've used all our luck. We've at least got to take away their ability to drive up and start shooting, I replied. Sarge nodded. I've been thinking on that. They're far enough away that if they didn't have wheels, it would be a lot harder for them to get here. Not to mention, they wouldn't be able to bring in heavy weapons. Sarge flipped the leaf out onto the hood. But now, we may have a real problem from what you heard on the radio. If the UN is talking about sending in peacekeepers, you can bet your ass it's because our turd-in-chief is asking for help. He's probably getting desperate and is willing to take any help he can get. I thumped the hood. But he's got to know these clowns aren't going to come over here and lose soldiers just to help out. They're going to want something in return. I'd like to talk to the general and see what the hell's going on. How legit this threat is. If there's a real possibility of them coming, then we've really got to take those guys at the Elks camp out before they show up. Or we'll damn sure have our hands full, Sarge said. Cecil and the engineers walked out of the plant, talking. Well, what's the verdict? I asked. Nothing in there is obviously damaged, Scott said. Terry jabbed a thumb over his shoulder. The switches out in the substation are open on both sides. The lines coming from the plant as well as to the distribution. That means the transformers there are probably good too. We may actually have a chance at this. You get us that generator and we can start testing, Baker said. Nodding, I replied. I'll get on that today. Something else for your to-do list, Morgan, Cecil said. We need to get to work planting. I need Thad and some other bodies. I know. We've just had our hands full the last couple of days. I'll get Thad to come down tomorrow. See what you can find for bodies in town. Talk to Sheffield. He's supposed to provide security for you. Then get with Sean and tell him to get the prisoners ready to send out there as well. They can work off their sentences out there, I said. You're going to let the boy that killed that girl work it off? Cecil asked. Shaking my head, I said, no, but he's going to work until it's time for him to be put in the dirt. Cecil nodded. Good. When do you think you'll have the generator here? Scott asked. I shrugged. Don't know. We'll have to figure out how to move it first. It's sitting on the ground, and we'll need to get it loaded on a trailer and drag it over. I'll let you guys know when it's here. Once it's here, though, there will need to be a constant presence to guard it. We won't be able to leave it unattended. That won't be a problem. We'll just move into the offices or something and set up house. I'll ask Sheffield for a couple of bodies to help with security as well, Scott replied. It's settled then, Sarge said, and he looked at Cecil. You got a tower at your place?
Cecil shook his head. No, I run a dipole.
We should still be able to reach each other. How many watts are you pushing?
I can push 100 watts, but I have to be careful because it takes a long time for me to recharge the batteries.
While Sergeant Cecil talked radio stuff, I asked Scott's crew what they thought of how we would get the power into town.
It's going to take a lot of work, Baker said. We're going to have to open a lot of sidelines and hope the transformers are good.
The local power company has a lay-down yard in the west side of town.
There are probably some stored there, I said.
Hopefully there are enough of them, Terry said.
Enough, John! We've got shit to do, so let's all get to it, Sarge barked.
He always was delicate.
Cecil's riding back with the engineers. Let's get going so you can sort out moving this generator.
Looking at Cecil, I said, I'll get Thad over tomorrow. He'll enjoy the time working in the dirt.
I'll be expecting him, Cecil replied with a smile.
Terry, I'll let you guys know when the generator is headed your way, I said.
We'll be ready. In the meantime, we're going to check out that laydown yard and see if there are any stored transformers, and whether they're any good, Terry replied.
As we got back in the Hummer, Ian slammed his fist on the roof.
Hurry up! That thing is starting to smell like hell.
Quit your whining. That's no way to talk about your dinner, Sarge replied.
As we rode, Sarge and I talked about the generator move for a while. Getting the beast on the trailer would be the hardest part, but I'm sure we would figure something out.
What were you and Cecil talking about? I asked.
We were setting up a frequency to stay in touch on HF.
Good. Someone else we can stay in touch with up there.
I cocked my head and looked at him. You know, I really like Cecil. He's good people.
Sarge chuckled.
He is, like me. He calls it how he sees it. He's also got a lot of experience in different things. Good man to know.
As the Kangaroo and Altoona came into view, I was relieved to see Mario's buggy. It would save me a trip out to his place.
Mario's there. I'm going to stop in and ask about the generator.
Sarge looked sideways at me.
Ask? You promise something you don't have?
He'll let us use it. Besides, we need it, and he's not using it.
Sarge let out a devilish laugh.
You're starting to think too much like me.
I wheeled up beside Mario's table and stopped. Shelley smiled and waved as I got out.
Hey, guys, how are you doing? She asked.
Mario was busy haggling over a deal. That was the way of things now. Bickering was back in style. A trader would offer a price, and the customer would counter, usually 50% of the first asking price. The typical deal would come in somewhere in the middle of the two. But there were exceptions on both sides.
We're good, Shelley. How's business? I asked.
She looked down at the table stacked with jars, candles, and blocks of wax.
Great. Everyone wants this stuff.
Mario finished up with his customer and walked over.
But not everyone has things of worth to offer.
Oh, stop it, Shelley said,
offering him a light slap on the shoulder.
What brings you fellas down here? Mario asked.
We need a favor, Sarge said.
Always happy to help if we can.
What is it?
Mario asked.
Ian hopped out of the truck.
I'm going to prowl around the market.
He wandered off to look over the offerings.
That old generator from the Eustace PD. We need to borrow it for a while, I said.
Mario shrugged.
It's yours. What are you going to do with it?
We've got some engineers in town to see if we can get the powerhouse at the old Golden Gem plant up and running.
Mario's eyebrows went up.
Really? Think you have a shot at it?
We won't know until we try.
Even if we get it running, there's a ton of work that will still be needed.
To say the least,
Mario replied.
I could see the wheels in his head turning.
We got hit again last night. Keep your eyes open and let us know if you see any DHS folks around, Sarge said.
Did anyone get hurt? Shelley asked.
Sarge nodded slightly.
Jamie was hit. She's up at the clinic now.
How bad?
Mario asked.
It's not good.
but it could have been worse, Sarge replied.
We also lost two people. You haven't met them. Tyler and Brandy. They were quarantined because they had TB. The house was set on fire. They got the kids out, two little ones, but they didn't make it, I said. Shelley covered her mouth.
Oh, that's horrible.
Mario was shaking his head.
Burned.
I couldn't imagine a worse thing. He looked at me.
Sorry, I was just...
I waved him off.
It's all right.
Tough for everyone, I said.
We're here to help whatever we can, Shelley said.
Looking at Mario, I asked,
you think we can get that generator on a trailer?
I'm sure we'll figure something out, Mario replied.
How about tomorrow?
All right, say 9 o'clock.
We'll be there, and we'll bring some of the knuckle-draggers with us to help, Sarge replied.
I've got some machinery that will help as well. I don't think it will be too big a deal, Mario said.
We talked for a while longer, sharing with Mario and Shelley the info about the radio broadcast. They were both hams as well, and wanted the frequency. Shelley said they spent most nights trying to find broadcasts. They'd found a few, but never reliably. Shelley said they would start monitoring the frequency as well.
Be sure and write down any coded messages you hear, Sarge said.
You really think the Russians and Chinese will come? Mario asked.
Sarge shrugged.
I don't know. It'd be a hell of a thing if they did. We think we've got problems now dealing with these bumbling idiots with the DHS, but the Russians? They're some mean bastards. Tough. Well-armed.
What about the Chinese? Shelley asked.
Mean little fuckers. What they lack in quality weapons, they make up for in sheer numbers.
We'll worry about that when the time comes, I said. Sarge took a very serious tone.
If it comes to that, we'll have more to worry about than you can imagine.
If what you said is right, we could be truly screwed, Mario said.
Keep your ears open, Sarge said, and turned around. Ian, saddle up.
I'll see you guys tomorrow, I said. As we walked back to the truck, Mario said,
what the hell?
Sarge beamed.
Got me a gator.
Mario and Shelley walked over and looked in the back of the Hummer.
It's a big one, Shelley said.
I like gator meat, Mario said with a smile.
You want some of it?
Mario politely hesitated.
Well, yeah, but I couldn't take it from you.
Sarge slapped him on the back.
Of course you can. We'll bring it over in the morning.
Smiling even wider, Mario replied.
I mean, if you insist.
Shelley laughed.
Oh, whatever. We'd love some. He's trying to act all bashful.
Let's get home and butcher this big lizard. Then we'll bring some meat over. We said our goodbyes as Ian ran up and climbed into the truck. Getting back in, we made the short ride to the neighborhood. Pulling in, I stopped at the bunker. Eric, Fred, and Jess were there, on duty.
How's Jamie? Jess asked, as I rolled to a stop.
With a slight shrug, I said,
she's at the clinic. Doc stayed with her.
Sarge leaned forward.
She'll be all right. She's a tough girl. Doc won't let anything happen to her.
Jess smiled weakly.
I hope so. I miss her already.
She looked up at Ian and squinted against the sun.
Several of us do.
Ian smiled, but didn't say anything for a moment.
She's too mean to kill. They'll have to do better than that. We've got a lizard to get, Sarge said.
I see that, Eric said, looking in the back of the truck.
It's huge. It's dinner, Sarge shot back.
We're having gator meat for dinner? Fred asked.
Looks that way. You like it? I asked.
She twisted her face.
Don't know. I've never had it.
It's good. I like it fried, Eric said with a smile.
Well, I'm sure Miss Kay will do something wonderful with it, Sarge replied.
We'll see you guys at dinner, I said, and pulled off. We took the beast to Danny's house. Thad and Mary were in the garden working when we pulled in. Danny came out as I backed the truck up towards the sheds.
What's up? Danny asked as we were getting out. I took care of the meat issue for a little while, Sarge replied with a smile. Danny walked around to the back of the Hummer and opened it.
Damn, that's a nice-looking gator. I want to keep the skin as nice as we can, Sarge said.
Sounds good to me. I've never done a gator before. Should be fun, Danny said. Not wanting to, but knowing I must, I asked Danny about the recovery at Tyler and Brandy's. Danny looked at the ground.
We couldn't find much, but what we found, we buried out back by Jeff.
What about them youngins? Sarge asked.
They're in the house with Bobby and Kay. Jay said Tyler pushed them out the window, but was too weak to get himself out. I guess Brandy was too weak to even try. Sarge shook his head.
That's a hell of a thing.
At least the kids are okay, I said.
They're shook up and not really saying much, but Kay and Bobby are in there fussing over them, Danny said.
It's sad, but what's done is done, Sarge said.
He then looked at the gator.
Right now, we've got work to do.
I looked at him.
This is far from done.
He stared at me for a moment.
It ain't over, Morgan.
I looked off into the woods behind him.
We can't lose anymore. Looking back at him, I added, I'm not burying anyone else.
Don't worry, Morg. They'll pay for what they've done.
He reached out and gripped my shoulder.
Pay for all of them.
Danny set up 3 sawhorses and laid out a couple pieces of plywood on it to make it long enough so we could work the whole animal. Once it was on the makeshift bench, we looked the beast over. Sarge asked Ian to go get Mike and Ted.
No problem, Ian said, as he headed off.
I took my vest off and laid it on a stump by the shed and pulled the SE from its sheath. Looking at the gator, I said,
well, I guess we'll start at the beginning.
Whoa, 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 Sarge said. He looked at me and asked, you ever skinned a gator?
No, I replied.
Then I looked around.
What is that banging?
I'd heard it when we first arrived. It seemed to have some sort of rhythm, starting and stopping. Danny looked around, too.
I was wondering the same thing. Then keep your dick skinners off it till I tell you what to do.
He asked Danny for a razor knife. Danny grabbed one from the toolbox in the shed and brought it back out. Sarge took the tool and looked at us.
The hide on one of these is the most valuable part.
Can we eat it? I asked with a grin.
Sarge pursed his lips and shook his head.
Just shut up and pay attention.
He took the razor and traced a line on the gator's back.
You skin these from the top down. You don't split the belly open like on most critters.
Using the razor knife, he made a cut just outside the large bumps on the gator's back, starting just behind the head. As he worked, he continued to explain what he was doing.
These knots are called scutes. We're going to make another cut on the other side as well, until they meet at the tail.
After the second cut on the opposite side, he began to peel the hide back, running the blade of his knife along the meat.
Here, Danny. Pull back on this so I can cut it, Sarge said.
Danny did as instructed. As they worked in that section, Thad walked up. Seeing the gator, he stopped short.
Oh, hell no!
Chuckling, I said, come on, Thad, it ain't a snake. Keeping his distance from the gator, Thad walked around the scene.
No, it ain't no snake. It's a damn crocodile.
A snake will bite you, but a crocodile will eat your ass. Danny and I both laughed at him. Sarge snorted.
Yeah, well, we're gonna eat this crocodile. Actually, it's an alligator. There aren't any crocs in this part of the world.
As Sarge said that, Danny lifted the back section of hide from the gator.
That thing's a damn monster, Thad said.
Sarge smiled broadly.
Yeah, but it's so good.
Thad eyed him.
What's it taste like?
Sarge straightened up.
Gator, of course. That whole it tastes like chicken is chicken shit. If you wanted something that tastes like chicken, then eat chicken.
Sarge looked at me. All right, Morgan, pay attention.
Sarge made another cut on the top of one of the gator's legs, from just above the foot, up to where the hide was missing.
I want you and Danny to start skinning these legs back.
After he made the cut, I used my knife to start peeling back the skin. It had an interesting feel, reminded me of vinyl. I looked at Thad.
Danny said you guys took care of Tyler and Brandy.
Wasn't much to take care of, but we did what we could.
We're going to make it right, Thad, Sarge said.
Ain't going to make any difference to them, Thad said.
Maybe not,
I said.
But it will to us if we don't have to dig any more graves. Thad nodded.
That will make a difference.
Sarge looked up at Thad.
You know, there's four legs. Get your ass over here and start working on that other in there.
Thad's brow furrowed as he stared at the animal. Sarge cackled.
Quit being a pussy and get over here. It's dead, for fuck's sake.
He was trying to bring Thad out of the dark hole he was on the edge of. The guy seen some horrible crap, and no doubt this was wearing on him. Thad removed the gun scabbard from his back and stepped up to the table. Drawing his knife, he poked at the gator, as if he expected it to jump off the table. It made all of us laugh. Thad hesitantly touched the gator with one finger. After a moment, he was running his hands over the gator's skin.
I ain't never touched one before. Feels kind of like plastic, Thad said.
Finally, past his apprehension, Thad got to work. With a skilled hand, he made short work of the leg he was working on and quickly moved on. Under Sarge's tutelage, we had the top side of the beast skinned in no time, and had to roll it over to continue the process. Just as we flipped it, Ian showed up with Mike and Ted in tow.
Holy hell, Mike shouted when he saw what we were doing. The old poacher finally got him a gator.
Without looking up, Sarge barked.
I ain't no poacher.
Looking down at the reptile, Mike said,
It's your lie, you tell it. Shit, what's a poacher anyway? You gotta ask the state for permission to feed yourself? Think about it. What's the natural way for a man to eat? He has to hunt or fish. He has to go get his meat. But in today's ass-backwards world, that's illegal, lest you go to the state and get permission. They see hunting as a privilege and not a right. Instead, they say you have to go buy your meat from a store, on styrofoam trays wrapped in plastic. You get to have a license to do any damn thing.
Sarge looked up.
Except to vote.
Ted snorted.
The one thing there should be a license for.
And an IQ test, Mike added.
Sarge looked at Mike.
That'll keep you from ever seeing a polling booth.
The comment got a round of laughs from all of us. Mike snorted.
I forgot more than you know.
Shit. You're so damn ignorant, you don't even know what you don't know, Sarge shouted.
Mike looked at the gator and Thad.
You know what you're doing?
I'm following his lead,
Thad said with a smile.
Careful with that, Thad. He led us into some shitty situations, Ted said.
Sarge cut his eyes at him.
Yeah, but I always brought your asses out.
Ted nodded slowly.
That you did.
Sarge then looked at Mike.
And hell yes, I know what I'm doing.
I think you've done this before, Mike said.
Sarge nodded his head slightly.
Once or twice.
Danny was working the hide from the tail and asked, Ever have a license? Sarge looked up, and holding his trigger finger up, working it back and forth, he said,
Yeah, right here. This is all the license I need.
Mike grunted.
Told you he was a poacher.
An interesting thing about a gator is that it has a perpetually erect penis. And on occasion, when that nerve is hit, it will shoot out as if on a spring. As Sarge was cutting around one of the back legs, he hit that nerve in the gator, and its penis suddenly shot out. It caused all of us to jump back, except the old man. He quickly grabbed a hold of it and sliced it off.
Mike was wide-eyed.
"What the hell is that?"
he shouted. Sarge grinned and threw it at Mike's face.
"It's a dick, Dick."
The phallus hit him on the chin as he jumped back. We all started to laugh as he thrashed about, wiping his chin vigorously.
"What the fuck, man?"
Ted was doubled over laughing. Pointing at Mike, he said,
"You just got teabagged by a gator. A dead gator, no less."
Sarge erupted into laughter and had to stop work. Mike looked down at the member lying in the dirt and picked it up. He eyed Sarge, though only briefly, before taking a quick step towards Ted, who was still laughing uproariously. Before Ted saw him, Mike slapped Ted in the face with it. The laughter ceased as Ted went into a spitting fit.
"Dude, I had my fucking mouth open!"
"Oh, that's just wrong," Ian shouted. That was it. We were all now immobilized with laughter. Even Mike got his chance for a good laugh, reminding me so much of Goose from Top Gun. Once we all had ourselves under control, we got back to work. Now that the hide was off, it was time to get serious. Sarge was sharpening his knife on a folding diamond hone as he talked about the next phase of the process.
"All right, girls, listen up. A gator has basically two kinds of meat, white and dark."
"No wonder they say it tastes like chicken," Ted said.
"Shut up, Teddy, or I'll shove that gator cock in your mouth again," Sarge replied.
Ted's brow wrinkled, and he turned his head slightly and spit.
"Didn't take you for a spitter," Sarge added.
Mike started to laugh until Sarge said,
"You really want my attention, Mikey?"
Suddenly, Mike found something very interesting in the trees behind us.
"Now, where was I?"
Sarge asked.
"Two kinds of meat," I said.
"Right. So, the jowl meat and the jelly roll from the tail are the white meats. The rest is dark meat."
"Jelly roll?" Thad asked.
Sarge smiled.
"Yeah, jelly roll. Let me show you."
Working on the tail, he separated the meat from the bone. At the base of the tail, he pulled the muscle back and reached down inside and pulled out a smooth tube of meat and cut it free. Removing the beautiful piece of nearly translucent muscle, Sarge held it up and said,
"This is the finest piece of eating on these things. It's a tenderloin, and there's another one on the other side."
Sarge laid the piece of flesh down and went to work on the other side. In the blink of an eye, he had the other one out. Picking up the two pieces of meat, Sarge said,
"Now go ahead and bone out the rest of the critter. Don't open it up. It don't need to be gutted. Just cut the meat off it."
"Where are you going?" I asked.
"To give these to Miss Kay so she can get started on supper," Sarge replied.
He then looked at Mike and Ted.
"I want you two to get out there to Elk's camp and get a lay of the land. We need some range cards. I want a place to set the mortar up. Get us some ranges so we can drop some heat on those bastards. I also want you to find out where the vehicles are stored so we can hit as many of them as possible, too."
"I'm going with them," Ian said. Sarge looked at him.
"I know you want to, but I want you to stay here. Those bastards could come back, and we need to keep as much manpower here as we can. But don't worry, you'll get your chance, Ian. I'll make sure you get some scalps for your belt."
Ian nodded. "All right, but when the time comes, don't even think about keeping me out of the fight."
"I wouldn't dream of it," Sarge said.
"When are you thinking of hitting them?" I asked.
"We need some intel first. See what their strength is and work up a plan. When we do this, we're all in. There will be no half measures," Sarge said.
"No half measures," Danny repeated. I was looking at Ian and could tell there was a fire in him.
"I say you let Ian go. Three of them stand a better chance of getting out if they run into anything."
Ian looked at me, then at Sarge. Sarge crossed his arms and eyed Ian.
"You want some get back, don't you?"
Ian nodded.
"All right. Go with him. Just remember, this isn't the time to start any shit. This is recon only."
"Cross my heart," Ian replied.
"All right. Go with him."
"We'll get it done, boss," Ted said.
You boys be careful, Sarge said.
Damn sure be careful, I added, then asked, how's Perez?
Ian smiled.
He's getting better. He's sore all over now. The shits are gone, though. I hope you guys are staying away from him, Sarge said.
Ian nodded.
We are. We just slide some food under the door to him. Doc gave us a bottle of alcohol to wipe things down with, and we've been doing that. I don't want to get sick.
You better not. You ain't got permission. Now get. You got lots of stuff to do, Sarge said.
The three men nodded and quickly left to get their gear together. As we stood there, the hammering started again.
What the hell is that?
I said. Then I looked around.
You smell smoke?
Thad looked off in the direction of the sound.
Someone is hammering on something, and yeah, I smell it.
You guys got this? I want to go see what the hell that is, I said.
Thad nodded.
Sure, ain't no big deal.
I'm taking these pieces of meat inside, and I'll be back. Thad, you and Danny cut them jowls out. That's good meat,
Sarge said, as he headed for the house. Chapter 5. I found the source of the hammering under a lean-to-type shed behind one of the houses on the block. There was a large fire burning in front of it. As I approached the shed, I called out,
Yo!
A shirtless Dalton came out of the small shed. In his right hand, he held a 5-pound hammer. He was sweating and covered in soot.
Hello, hello,
he said with a broad smile.
What the hell are you doing? What's all the racket?
He smiled and beckoned me towards the shed.
Follow me and I'll show you, laddie.
Under the tin roof of the shed was a crude forge. The firebed was actually an old wheelbarrow pan, one of the shallow ones that makes you wonder what in the hell its purpose is. I could carry more in a 5-gallon bucket. He'd removed the handles and wheel and had it set up on what was once a cast iron patio table. Lying on the ground was a foot bellow, the kind used to blow up inflatable mattresses when camping or when you had company you didn't particularly care for.
What do you think? Took me a couple days to get it all sorted out, but it's working good now,
Dalton said, beaming with pride.
I nodded.
Looks good, but, why didn't you just drag an old Weber grill or something over here from one of the houses?
Dalton blinked at me, then looked at the forge. Shrugging, he said,
Hell, anyone could do that.
Sitting beside the forge was a small anvil. Pointing at it, I asked,
Where in the hell did you find that? Like everything else, in a barn behind one of the houses. It was covered with rust, but it still serves its purpose just fine.
The old anvil was indeed covered in rust. Thick chunks formed a ring around its base, having been loosed during hammering. Dalton had also scrounged an assortment of ad hoc smithing tools. Picking up a large pair of channel locks, I said,
Looks like you've got about everything you need. What are you making?
Taking the channel locks, he plucked an axe head, or what was once an axe head, from the bed of coals. Laying it on the anvil, he gripped the hammer, cut me an evil grin, and said,
Tomahawks!
And then he slammed the hammer into the red-hot steel with a shower of sparks. He hammered on it for several strokes before plunging it back into the coals. Looking at me, with an eye squinted shut and the opposite eyebrow arched, he shouted,
Air, lad! I need air! Doddle not! Make yourself useful!
I looked down at the foot bellow and stepped down on it. The coals began to glow a bright red. Dalton called for more air, and I continued to pump the bellows. His enthusiasm was infectious, and soon I was laughing.
You're nuts, I shouted.
He leaned in close to my face.
We're working iron.
I stayed with him for a while, working the bellow while he reshaped the axe head. As we worked, I asked about the large fire. Dalton pointed at it.
Making charcoal. See that can there? It's full of chunks of wood. Cook it down to coal.
Nodding, I said,
Like a gasifier.
Yeah, same principle.
except we're not collecting the gas. Looking back into the fire pit, I asked, "So you're making charcoal to burn in here?" Dalton adjusted the head in the coals. "Yep. This burns hotter, and there's no real flame. Makes it a lot easier." Looking at him, I asked, "Why?" Dalton took the axe head from the coals and laid it on the anvil. Shrugging, he said, "Every boy needs a hobby." Then he smiled and added, "Idle hands are the devil's playground." Mike squatted in the tall grass, observing the cluster of small concrete block cabins through a pair of binoculars. "This side sucks," he said, as he slowly dropped back down. Ted looked around. "Yeah, we're downhill. Not where I'd want to be when the bullets started flying." "We need to find the trucks," Mike said. "All right, let's move to the west and go around to see what we can find," Ted replied. "I think we need a little security," Ian said, as his eyes darted around. "I don't like this." As a Marine, Ian was accustomed to taking the fight to the enemy, kicking in doors and smoking bad guys with speed and violence of action. He was not comfortable with the whole sneaking and peeking thing. He tried out for force recon, but it quickly became clear he wasn't cut out for it. He wasn't the right guy for precision warfare. He was a hammer, and everything to him looked like a nail. Not that he wasn't good at what he did. Two purple hearts and a bronze star were acknowledgments of his past deeds. "I'm going to provide rear security. I'll shadow you guys so no one sneaks up on our six," Ian added. Ted nodded. "All right, good idea. There's a lot of goons running around. If you see something, let us know. These radios are encrypted, so they won't be able to listen in, even if they knew we were here." Ian nodded and gave a thumbs up. "Quick radio check," Mike said, and keyed his mic. Ted and Ian both heard the squelch break and nodded. Then each did the same. "All right, keep your eyes open," Ted said, as he and Mike moved off. The camp had several very nice features. One was a military-style confidence course on the northeast side. There were twin pools, mirrors of one another, sitting together just off the dining hall. Behind it was a series of ball fields. A large auditorium was the crowning component of the facility. Mike and Ted moved around the ball field slowly and cautiously. The place was full of people, and they'd seen two roving patrols already. While they hadn't been noticed, it was enough to keep them on their toes. The patrols seemed lackadaisical at best, with those in the element walking with weapons slung and talking amongst themselves. Mike noted their discipline, or lack of it, on his pad. The Elks camp is situated on over 400 acres of rolling hills and scattered oak trees. It opened in 1991 to serve kids and has been continually upgraded to be one of the finest youth camps in the state. At least it was. Now, the 50-plus cabins house elements of the DHS and those working with them. It was early evening, and Ted and Mike kept to the tree lines and thicker brush. Lack of maintenance since the day meant overgrown grass, weeds, and brush, something they used to their advantage. Once the sun went down, they would be able to move a little freer, but would see less. Ted halted and moved slowly to the edge of the trees on the west side of the ball field. It was a thin line of screening vegetation, so they had to be cautious. Lying prone, Ted scanned the main road of the camp, then passed the binoculars to Mike. "There's the trucks." The area was busy with people, but in a very organized fashion. There were only a couple of open fires they could see, which made them wonder where the camp occupants were cooking. But there were two large buildings that could easily handle that. Not to mention, this was a large camp. There had to be a kitchen someplace. The people they saw were, for the most part, not carrying long arms. While many had pistols on their sides, only a few were seen with a rifle. Either they were practicing some discipline in camp, or they were confident they were safe, and it wasn't deemed necessary. Ian moved into the tree line as well, staying 100 or so yards away. He raised up on his elbows and looked towards Mike and Ted. Seeing the tops of their heads and confirming where they were, he
He dropped back down and settled in behind his rifle. Ian scanned the area around the pools through the ACOG mounted on his carbine. He observed the black-clad stormtroopers. As the peak of the chevron on the optic crossed ahead, he would whisper, "Boom," and move on to the next one and repeat it. He wanted to shoot these bastards. While Ian was always in this fight, things were now personal. He wanted retribution. He wanted their heads. Mike adjusted the glass and looked at the line of the vehicles sitting on the main road. Just to the south was a large metal building with its roll-up door open and what appeared to be a truck getting serviced. "That's the motor pool there," Mike said. Ted nodded. "Yeah, they've got some hardware there."